This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Right now is one of the most important times in the 26-year history of Joy. Times are tough financially, but that will never stop us delivering powerful, meaningful and uplifting radio for you. To get ready for the future, we're launching Joy Nation and we need your support to do it. So help Joy by asking your workmates, your next door neighbour, your mum, your dad, your siblings and of course your friends. Go to joy.org.au and make a donation to build Joy Nation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture. Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12 on Joy 94.9.
And you're listening to Saturday Magazine with Macca and Tass. Macca, what are we doing now?
Okay, Senator Dean Smith is a Liberal Senator from WA. Dean was responsible for the bill that legalised same-sex marriage in Australia. It was his bill. It was a private member's bill. And it's our great pleasure to welcome Dean. He's in his office in Perth. Good morning, Dean. How are you?
Good morning to you, Macca and Tez. And I understand that congratulations are in order on a very, very successful radiothon.
There you go. You're on the money.
Well done.
Well, I've got to thank you, Dean, because you are one of the, politicians and community leaders and influencers that actually did a video for us.
With a great bright West Australian city skyline backdrop, if I remember.
It was. And I've got to tell you, those videos were really, really popular because the central message was independent media and how important it is. And so I really appreciate that and, you know, all the support you've given Joy over the years, and I know you'll continue to support us. So
hear, hear.
Thank you for that.
Well, it's always been a very, very strong voice for LGBTI community, and sometimes it's not always easy for our views to get heard and, you know, accurately represented in mainstream media. So congratulations to everyone that does a great job at Joy. It's very, very important.
Thank you so much, Dean.
We wanted to kick off, Dean, because you've got a fairly long history of being a supporter in an increase in Newstart, which is now known as JobSeeker. And, you know, we all, look, we're all well aware of the
problem. You're trying to get me into trouble, aren't you?
No, we would never want to do that.
No. Always go.
Dean, we see you as an ally and as a friend.
Yes.
Why would we want to get you in trouble?
That's right. I think you're capable of making your own.
I think there are others on the list well above yourself.
And I got to say, we have had a request into Centrelink for 3 weeks for them to talk to us. But, you know, why go to the monkey when we can speak to the organ grinder?
I'll give it a go. But no, that is true. That I've had for a long time. I've had a personal view that about the inadequacy of Newstart now JobSeeker. That's correct. Yeah.
What happens, Dean, in a couple of months' time when this additional extra money that's being poured into JobSeeker ceases?
Well, you're talking about the COVID-19 supplement.
Correct.
That has been that's been rolled out to support a variety of income support payments, including JobSeeker, as it's now known. Now that will sit that additional payment will be in place for 6 months. So it's not as if it's going to be taken away too quickly. But I think if we just take a step back, Tez, I think what is very, very clear to me is that a lot of things that were impossible pre-COVID are now possible during and post-COVID, or at least back on the table. And just in the last few weeks, actually, the Senate Community Affairs Committee issued a report or released a report which examined the adequacy of Newstart, as they called it, but as JobSeeker as we now know it. And it had some very, very interesting information. My views are governed by what I see when people come and visit me around Western Australia. Many of the letters that I get, and certainly when I made some comments earlier in the year, I did get quite a lot of letters from people about the inadequacy of Newstart. And for me,
in other words, you're listening to your electorate, Dean.
Paying a lot of attention, paying perhaps too much attention, no, but I was listening very closely. And what is interesting to me, and we've talked about this particular element of my work before, is that I do a lot of work with grandparent carers in our community. And what struck me about, or what has struck me about this issue, is that there are about 25% of, you know, New Start recipients who are actually, you know, over the ages of 65. So the mature age workforce component of this issue is a key priority for me. People might find it harder to get work because they've got fewer skills or different skills because they're aging workers in the workforce but not having yet met retirement. So they have, you know, lots of commitments, mortgages and other commitments. So that's a particular interest of mine, which has sort of really focused my attention on the issue. I think this Senate committee report that came out in the last few weeks will, you know, add some substance to the debate we've had over the last 6 months. And in the last 6 months, we've had, you know, Tony Abbott come out writing about this issue, wanting, you know, it to be viewed as a wage subsidy. We've had national backbench MPs come out. So I suspect, like many, many issues post-COVID, it's one that will get a very, very, very thorough review. But look, I'm someone who believes that the current arrangements are inadequate.
So, Dean, you know, we've seen the mouth from the South, Jackie Lambie, saying that, you know, she doesn't agree that it should be removed. You know, you're putting a view.
Oh, we're talking about the COVID supplement now.
The COVID supplement. But the reality is, we all know that $40 a day is not sufficient. Mm. And, you know, many people that I know that have been getting this supplement are now actually, you know, able to pay rent and bills and eat properly. You know, it's about human dignity, and you know, look, we realise and we recognise this comes at a financial cost. But what is the financial cost? And there've been some figures come out that a very large proportion of people who've self-harmed over the last 10 years were on Newstart. Now, you know, what this says to me is that we're our duty of care to these people. You know, as a society, we're letting it slip, and I hope that what happens as a result of COVID-19 is that all these hundreds of thousands of people that are now accessing Centrelink and discovering what a magnificent Byzantine organisation it is, that they might actually have a little bit more feeling for people that are getting welfare benefits. You know, people that have never had any engagement with Centrelink before are discovering just what a cluster it is.
Two things I'd say. The first is there's no denying that you know, we want to increase and improve people's economic participation. That should be the foundational goal, if you like. But and this has come through the Senate report again, there's no doubt that many people on Newstart do have elevated risks of poor physical and mental health and homelessness. That's not disputed. And I suspect the answer, Macca, is somewhere between the sort of the pre-COVID arrangement and the current arrangement in terms of what that improved financial benefit might actually look like. But can I just say one thing about Centrelink and its COVID response. Yep, there's been no doubt that, and I get lots of calls over the last few weeks about people trying to manoeuvre through Centrelink and get the right support that they're entitled to. But I do think that, you know, Centrelink and many, many of the officials that have been supporting, you know, the community's COVID response are going above and beyond. So while it has been difficult for some people to sort of access and move through Centrelink, I think we should also sort of find some space to sort of congratulate those people that have been working at Centrelink, putting in those extra hours to make sure that everyone can get that taxpayer-funded additional support that they're entitled to.
Oh, no, look, absolutely, Dean, I agree with you that, you know, the people at Centrelink have been, you know, above and beyond. The problem is they're working with a set of policies and an IT system.
It's a bit antiquated.
That Robert Menzies would have thought was
advanced. It's a little bit antiquated.
Would have thought was advanced. Now, the challenge has got to be, what is the mood, as you see it, in the community for retention of some of that COVID supplement and, you know, as an increase in Newstart? So what are you hearing in the community, but also around Parliament House? What are you hearing there?
Well, we've not been in Parliament for a while, but I am heading back tomorrow, so I will probably have a better answer to that element of the question in a week or two's time. But to be honest, I'm not hearing a lot in the community just yet around the extension of the COVID payment beyond that six-month period. And I think that's totally understandable at the moment. People are dealing with the immediacy of changed workplace relations, the immediacy of schooling children at home, the immediacy of changed routine. So I'm not hearing a lot about that just at the moment, but I would expect to hear more about it as we start to loosen the restrictions. We're starting to get back to, you know, life as we knew it pre-COVID. So there's no doubt, and I think this is the point you're making, Maka, there's no doubt that this is an issue that will be on the table and that will get quite extensive debate once we're on the other side of COVID.
Dean, is Parliament sitting next week, is it?
Yes, it is sitting on the Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday.
What's on the agenda?
So normal sitting days for the Senate and for the House of Representatives. So a variety of legislation, some of it COVID-related, like the COVID app, for example, privacy arrangements, but other, let's call it non-COVID-related legislation. So it's being characterised as business as usual on the Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday for the Senate and the House of Representatives. So I'll be sort of heading out early tomorrow morning. And as the Chief Whip, trying to, establish a regime with my colleagues about social distancing arrangements and how we make it work.
Now, we're going to go to a break. I just want to give our listeners a heads up that once restrictions are relaxed sufficiently, that Dean Smith and his colleague across the aisle, Labor Senator Kimberly Kitching, are going to do the Dean and Kimberly show, just like we had the Tim Wilson and Josh Burns show on Saturday Magazine. They're going to have control of the studio and the show for an hour, or perhaps,
and the guests, Macca,
and bring their own guests.
I'm actually quite excited about this. Actually, I have chatted to Kimberly about it when we sort of crossed paths in Parliament.
So we're not going to give away who you'd like as guests, but I know a couple of the names are really interesting. That will happen, you know, when Dean's able to get here to Melbourne and Kimberly's based in Melbourne, and like Tim and Josh, where we handed over the studio for a couple of hours. You guys are actually going to be the hosts.
I'm looking forward to it. I've got my list of questions for Kimberly already.
Have you?
Well, she's not
putting her on notice.
She's not your guest. She's actually your co-host.
Your co-host.
Actually, that's quite right, Taz. I do have to get that. I do have
now,
to get
look,
that clear
I, there is a question here for you, Dean, very, very quickly from one of our listeners. Have you read Mr. Turnbull's book? Yes or no?
No, I haven't.
Are you going to?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I suspect the history on many of the issues that have been raised in Mr. Turnbull's book have been written well before his book was published. On the issue of same-sex marriage, which I get asked a lot about, that was delivered by many, many people over many, many years, and the parliamentary process came at the very end of that. And I'm someone who has always wanted to sort of keep the focus on the contribution of others to what was a really important and sizable public debate in our country.
And really quickly, let's not forget it was Dean's bill that became law, but also let's not forget, I remember Malcolm Turnbull saying that religious freedom was more important to him than marriage equality. And he's now claiming, you know, he wants the crown of marriage equality. Well, mate, the crown you should be wearing is a crown of thorns.
You are listening to Saturday Magazine with Macca and Tass, and we do have Senator Dean Smith from WA on the airwaves. Macca.
Yes, thanks, Tass. And Dean, and I want to give our listeners a little heads up. The next segment, we're going to talk about the parliamentary committee that you've chaired into the National Redress Scheme for survivors of historical child sexual abuse. And if this subject distresses you or is going to make you feel really uncomfortable, please don't feel you have to listen. If you do need to reach out, there's Key Life, there's Switchboard, there's Lifeline, there's Beyond Blue. So please do so. And I want to place on record, there's something really important has happened here. This committee that Dean has chaired, and it's got Liberal folk, Labor folk and Greens, this committee has done what every community expects our parliamentarians to do, and that is, in a bipartisan, professional way, looked at the issues, investigated them, debated them, and come up with recommendations. It's actually not rocket science, but it doesn't happen often enough, so I want to place on record this interim report, over 100 pages. It's a big read, but it's a really important issue, and I want to congratulate you, Dean, for your chairmanship of that committee, but also all the other members of that committee and all the people that were courageous enough to come forward and, you know, talk to the committee about their experience with the redress scheme, TASS.
Dean, I was just going to ask you the very first question. Give us a sense of what this report actually says. What are the highlights? Yeah, keep it brief.
Yep. So, long, but very important story short. Effectively, well, one of the most important recommendations of the 14 recommendations we made in this interim report is for the full and early disclosure of the names of institutions that have not yet or are unlikely to meet the 30 June deadline, that's 30 June this year, to sign up to the National Redress Scheme. And what we've argued for is that not just the name of the institution, but the offices of that institution and a full list of all of their financial public benefit, whether that be charitable status benefits and other sorts of things, should be provided in a written statement and publicly available a week before that deadline as a means of encouraging institutions to join, but also to hold them accountable.
Tell us a little bit about what you're actually trying to achieve, though.
So what happens in the National Redress Scheme is that someone who is seeking redress for a sexual, I prefer to call them crimes rather than abuses, but for a sexual crime committed against them as a child in an institution, when that application goes through the redress scheme and is the independent decision is taken that that redress should be paid to that survivor then has to wait for that redress to be paid to them if an institution that they have named has not yet joined the scheme. Now, what we know about the National Redress Scheme, which is different from what the Royal Commission expected to happen, was that while we've had fewer applications to the scheme than the Royal Commission expected, the applications are more complex and name many institutions, not just one institution, in many of the applicants. So what we have at the moment is we have a situation where, you know, about 500 survivors who it has been agreed are entitled to redress are waiting for that financial redress because the institution has yet to join the scheme. And we know that 9 institutions have already declined to join the scheme by the 30th of June deadline. I'm arguing that we want to see all of those institutions that have not yet joined. We want to understand why they have not yet joined. Now, they may have every...
What do you hope to achieve by naming and shaming these agencies that don't sign up to the redress scheme?
Well, I think what's happening is that it may well be that many institutions are actually avoiding doing all that they can, dealing with the issue and doing all that they possibly can internally to meet their internal requirements to sign up to the scheme. Now, it's just not acceptable because the 30th of June is also the 2-year anniversary of the National Redress Scheme. It is just not acceptable to the committee that over 240 institutions have not yet joined.
Now, the minister...
Because the people that pay for that, TAS, are the survivors who have been, who are entitled to redress.
Now, Dean, the minister...
Now, this is an important point because it's a scheme that's actually run by the Commonwealth and the states, run by the Commonwealth and the states together. Now, on this, I know that the Victorian government just recently in the last week or so did make some what I would regard as very, very positive comments about what it would be doing to recalcitrant institutions that didn't join the scheme.
So, Dean, the minister... And refresh me, which minister, federal minister, has carriage?
So the National Redress Scheme is the responsibility of the Minister for Social Services in the Commonwealth. So that's my colleague, Senator Rustin, Senator Anne Rustin from South Australia.
But it sits also in the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet, doesn't it?
No, it sits completely in the Department of Social Services.
Didn't the Prime Minister say during the apology that this... his department, Prime Minister and Cabinet, would have overall responsibility for this scheme? That's what he said.
If I recall, I think Turnbull was the Prime Minister at the time of the apology, but the matter now sits well and truly in the Department of Social Services. Yep.
Mm. I don't want to correct you, but Morrison did say, the minister. The minister also has acknowledged that naming and shaming is important. Now,
but is this policy, Dean? Is this? I mean, you've written an interim report. This is an interim report with a set of recommendations. Has the government said yes? This is what we will do.
So on that point, no, it has not said that yet, because the report was issued on the 1st of May. The report will be debated in the Senate this coming week. What I have done is...
as part of your business as usual discussion.
Yes, as part of the business as usual. We deal with committee reports, and committee reports are debated during the course of a normal Senate day. What I've done as the chairman of the committee is written to the Commonwealth and each of the jurisdictions, putting this proposition before them. There was some media on the matter in the last few days as well, because I think that the full, and the committee has endorsed it, the full and early disclosure of these institutions' names is very, very important. Important for the survivors themselves. Important for the survivors themselves, so they can see that the very, very high expectations that were set by the Royal Commission, the very high expectations that were set by the apology, are being pursued, and the survivors' voices are still being heard, even though we are moving further and further away from that Royal Commission process.
Now, I know, Dean, that the Royal Commission recommended a maximum payment of $200,000, which I still believe is low. It's currently $150,000. Has the committee recommended that payment be increased?
The committee has not examined that issue yet. It will examine it in the next few months as part of its second interim report. But the previous committee that existed in the previous parliament, that was chaired by Darren Hinch, came out very, very strongly arguing that $150,000 cap should actually be $200,000, which was the Royal Commission's recommendation.
Now, obviously, there's going to be a situation where an institution might be using or might have established its own redress scheme or is using an external redress scheme provider. I'm not going to name them, but I'm aware of a couple of them that are doing a fantastic job.
Yes.
So if they didn't join the national redress scheme, obviously they could make representations to the minister that this is what they're doing.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, yeah. And it is probably very, very well known to many people that are involved in the redress matters more broadly. Those types of institutions and the good work that they are doing. I've met with some here in Western Australia in the last week. But where my ambition, if you like, or my aspiration and that of the committee is a very, very simple one, is that is that the survivors' voices must continue to be heard, and that timeliness in dealing with applications and securing redress is now the most critical issue.
It is, Dean.
Many of them are very vulnerable people, as you know.
Yeah, and Dean, look, you know, it's well known. I'm a survivor. This is a passion of mine. I've read the report, and it's heavy reading. The recommendations are strong. I do hope that the government takes it on as policy, and the states also accept it. You had to do a lot of this, a lot of the hearings remotely, and obviously people, you know, by phone and video. So it wasn't actually live streamed, because obviously a lot of the content was quite confidential.
Well, one of the first, because the committee was established a few months ago, and one of the first things we had to decide was, well, do we use COVID as an excuse for not doing anything?
No.
Or do we sort of say, okay, well, the circumstances are different. We have to do it over the phones. We have to use alternative means. But the committee was very, very clear that it thought that these issues were, you know, important enough for the, you know, the committee to sort of take some alternative means to sort of get the work started. Now, the committee doesn't have to issue a final report until May 2022. Okay. And the committee could have decided to sort of, you know, not do much until May 2022. But together we decided, no, these issues deserve constant and immediate attention. The National Redress Scheme deserves to be constantly recalibrated to make it as good, as perfect as it can possibly be. And I'm someone who says that at the moment I think it's weighted too heavily in the favour of institutions and not in the favour of survivors.
I think it's great that you've done the work, Dean. Full marks for actually
proceeding. We've just started, of course. But you're right. You're quite right, Chaz. The challenge is actually not to issue a report with recommendations. The challenge now is to make sure that those recommendations are taken notice of and pursued and implemented.
And it become policy. One of our listeners has actually asked, how can we learn more about this? Where can people see the report? Is it available publicly? Can they watch the hearings?
We've actually got the address which Fiona's going to post on.
It's definitely on the website,
On the Twitter feed, the interim report.
Which website, Macca?
It'll be on our Twitter feed, but also we'll put it on Facebook. Look, we're out of time, Dean. Look, I wanted to say again, the work of this committee personally is very important to me. For the community of survivors, this is incredibly important work to be heard, to be listened to, and the recommendations are the sort of recommendations that make a lot of sense and they actually will deliver justice. So I want to place on record, actually, who were the members of the committee apart from yourself?
Yeah, good on you, mate. I was just about to interrupt, but good on you. So if I could just give a big shout-out to the deputy chair of the committee, Sharon Claydon, from Newcastle, who was on the previous committee in the previous part, Senator Rachel Seward from the Australian Greens, Victorian Senator Sarah Henderson, Dr. Katie Allen, Dr. Anne Webster, also all from Victoria, Senator Marielle Smith from South Australia, no relation, Milton Dick from Queensland, and Dave Sharma from New South Wales. I think I've captured everyone.
It's an extraordinary report. The fact, you've all agreed, it's a unanimous report. I hope the government and the states take it up as policy. And again, thank you. This makes a difference to survivors that they're being heard and, you know, that suggestions are being made as to how to improve the process for them. So I can only thank you for that, Dean.
Onwards and upwards.
Thank you for your time this morning, Dean. Thank you for your time.
Keep up the great work. Soon.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.